It's February 12th, 2020, and this is Markets Daily from CoinDesk. I'm Adam B. Levine, here along with John Biggs for your daily update. Today, in addition to our news rundown, we'll be talking with senior reporter Brad Cowan on the unique and not-so-unique challenges faced by Bitcoin miners today. And just a reminder, CoinDesk is a news source and does not provide investment advice. Here's the news.
Is Bitcoin sticking to its guns? The markets might not think so. The cryptocurrency seems to be maintaining its $10,000 price point and hit $10,350 in overnight trading. Analysts believe the price is on shaky ground. Why? The Money Flow Index, a momentum indicator that incorporates both price and trading volume, has risen to 86 on the three-day chart. That's the highest level since late 2017 when prices hit a lifetime high of $20,000. A reading above 80 indicates overbought conditions. The overbought conditions do not necessarily imply an imminent bearish reversal, but likely represent overexuberant Bitcoin buying. Bitcoin is currently at $10,373, and Ether is up to $256, according to the CoinDesk Price Index.
Back in China, it looks like Bitcoin mining is still being affected by the coronavirus. A key measure of competition among Bitcoin miners has stagnated in the past 2 weeks. The slowdown in the growth of the so-called mining difficulty signals that miners have had to pause upgrading equipment during the epidemic. Mining difficulty, which gauges the effort required to solve math problems in order to win newly created Bitcoin, adjusted on February 11th to a level 0.5% higher than 2 weeks earlier, data shows. This is far lower than previous difficulty changes. Bitcoin mining difficulty adjusts roughly every 2 weeks depending on the amount of computing power connected to the network. When more miners join the race to earn newly created Bitcoin, the difficulty rises. When miners drop out, the measure drops. A lower difficulty increase signals that miners are bringing new machines into the network at a slower rate than we're used to seeing, especially in the lead-up to Bitcoin's much-anticipated rewards halving later this year.
Cryptocurrency exchange Poloniex has been forced to roll back trading activity after it found an error in its system. The firm said in a tweet Tuesday that it rolled out a change that accidentally included a bug that, quote, briefly caused trades to be executed erroneously. Poloniex said its automated audits spotted the error and put the site in a maintenance mode. We have identified the bug and deployed a fix, they wrote. The bug forced the exchange to undo 12 minutes of platform activity. The platform also canceled withdrawals for a time. It appears the exchange is running normally now.
In political news, it looks like the Yang Gang will need to back another candidate. Presidential hopeful Andrew Yang has dropped out of the U.S. presidential race after a poor showing at the Iowa caucuses, where he received zero state delegates and only 1% of the vote, or in New Hampshire, where he received 2.9% of the vote. Yang entered the race in November 2017, centering his campaign around his signature universal basic income proposal, which would have provided a $1,000 per month income to every American adult. He was pro-cryptocurrency and felt there was a hodgepodge of regulations holding back the industry. His campaign drew a large amount of support on social media, with many crypto proponents joining his hashtag YangGang online.
Finally, a hacking group that calls itself Outlaw has resurfaced, this time with a piece of malware that can infect smart TVs. The group is known for their botnets, malicious computer networks that can be used to force a victim's computer to do things like mine cryptocurrencies. Now, however, Outlaw has pointed their efforts at smart TVs, devices that many users might not expect to be infected. According to security company Trend Micro, the botnet can now infect Android-based smart TVs and force them to secretly mine Monero cryptocurrency. The group is using the botnet to attack automotive and finance companies based in the US and Europe. Their goal? To hack into insecure systems and access corporate information that they can easily resell. And that's the news.
For today's featured story, we're joined by senior market reporter and Daily Show alum Brad Cowan. So yesterday we published a story about CoinMint, the largest crypto miner in North America today. And it's a fascinating story that has elements that you might find in any industry, but it also illustrates sort of the unique challenges and really uncertainty that can be pretty unique to crypto at times, namely Bitcoin's upcoming and much anticipated halving. Before we get into that, how did CoinMint get its start and how did it get so big?
There are two people who are the key principals in this project, Ashton Soniat and Pierre Leary, Adam. And these guys were actually friends when they were teenagers in New Orleans. Ashton proceeded to have a career in energy trading. He worked for companies including Enron, and Pierre went into the data center business. Fast forward to around 2016, and Pierre had the idea of using his data experience to go into crypto mining. He reached out to Ashton, who again had this energy trading background and had some money of his own, and they formed this company. They proceeded to build two sites in upstate New York. One was in Plattsburgh in a strip mall, and the other, they found a 1,300-acre lease at an old Alcoa plant in Messina, New York, which is right on the shores of St. Lawrence River and has plentiful hydropower in that area. And it's also cold, which is good for cooling the crypto mining computers. So it was seen as an ideal site for a big crypto mine. And they have poured tens of millions of dollars at least into this project, Adam.
You know, it's interesting that you say that both of these sites are in upstate New York. I think that when people think about cryptocurrency or at least mining in the United States, I think that Texas kind of gets the rap with all of kind of the open space and the relatively lower regulatory environment and the relatively cheap power. But you're saying that, you know, one of the advantages that New York had in this circumstance for them is that in addition to the cheap power, in addition to, you know, not New York City, but upstate New York, it's cold there. And that in itself lowers sort of the amount of energy that they have to put into these things.
That is absolutely the case. The computers are much more efficient when they're in a cold environment. And that's why you do see around the world a lot of cold places attracting crypto mines. Newfoundland, province of Labrador, Canada, Washington State is a big place for crypto mining, but also places like Norway and Sweden.
So two friends started off, created a company that became, frankly, the largest in the country for doing this type of mining activity. So something happened, though. As the sort of next halving has approached, things have become quite tense. What's going on?
Well, Adam, as with all of these things, it's about money, of course. You have one partner, Prieur, who believes that essentially the company has grown quite large. This is an industrial scale crypto mine. And from his initial investment, has been a partner all along and put a lot of work into it. And he tells me he's just not sure he wants to go into Bitcoin's halving in the next few months, because that is potentially a catalyst for higher Bitcoin prices, but that will reduce the mining rewards in half. And it could potentially really hurt a lot of miners. Prieur does not want to take that risk, that personal financial risk. His partner, Ashton, apparently has been unwilling to entertain some of the buyout offers that Prieur said that the company has received. And Ashton says he's behind the company and they are moving forward with expansions and taking out additional financing to expand this mine ahead of the halving. So you just have two partners sort of at odds over strategy, which is ultimately just about money.
So your story sort of came about because one of those partners, the minority partner, right, is actually suing sort of the organization or the larger partner to try and sort of force this issue.
That's right. Prieur tells me that he essentially tried to come up with various solutions with his partner and couldn't come to an agreement. He spoke with his lawyer. And his lawyer recommended that he file what's called a dissolution petition in Delaware Chancery Court. Prieur is essentially saying he believes that this would be a catalyst for the two sides to reach some kind of a solution.
So what you're telling me, Brad, is that the problem here is that they haven't tokenized the equity ownership in the underlying mining company.
They actually tried to launch a token to sell hash power, which is essentially batches of pre-sold crypto mining. You can go to somebody and say, hey, I'll sell you a certain amount of hash power. And if they buy that, you get money up front. They then agree to do that mining for you. And then you would get whatever rewards come from that. They never launched that token. That was in 2018, according to a Coinmint source. So no, they haven't tokenized the equity either. Just the big picture, Adam, crypto mining has become a very institutional, big money business. It's requiring increasingly industrial scale efforts, such as wholesale electricity procurement and managing these big sites, and hiring lots of people, and getting good bulk discounts on the Bitcoin mining computers. And all these mining firms are having to make hard decisions on what their strategy is going to be going into the halving and how they're going to finance expansions if that's and upgrades if that's what they're intending to do.
Well, Brad, thanks very much for your time. It's a hell of a story, and we'll be linking it in the show notes for today's episode.
Thank you, Adam.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back on Thursday. And just a reminder, the CoinDesk is a news source and does not provide investment advice. Have a good one.